headlines. Iran's president condemns the US for causing chaos in the region, particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan. France recalls its ambassadors to the US and Australia after Canberra struck a deal with Washington and London that ended a French-designed submarine deal. Also coming up, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns Israel about the consequences of its crimes against Palestinian prisoners. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says the Islamic Republic supports diplomacy and multilateralism and rejects the policy of sanctions and pressure.
Diplomacy is one of the means to ensure national interests of countries. It is efficient when all sides remain committed to their obligations in practice. Threatening and pressuring other sides weaken diplomacy.
Raisi made the remarks at the 21st annual meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Dushanbe, the capital of Tajikistan. He called the sanctions a big challenge to the world today, saying the domineering states have been using them as a tool to impose their will over others. The Iranian president also underlined that the sanctions are preventing regional cooperation and urged the SCO to define mechanisms to fight these challenges. He added the world is moving towards a new order that favors independent and sovereign states.
The world is entering a new era with a new order. Domination and unilateralism are on the decline. International order is moving toward multipolarization and redistribution of power in favor of independent states.
Raisi further condemned the U.S. for causing chaos in the region, particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said Washington needs to be held to account for what it has done in Afghanistan over the past 20 years. While rejecting foreign interference, Raisi noted that the sole way to establish security in the region is through regional cooperation. Iran has hailed gaining full membership into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as an important impetus for the country's Asia-centered foreign policy. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said the membership is a major step toward Tehran enhancing ties with its neighbors. Said Khatibzadeh added, Iran will continue pursuing, quote, indigenous initiatives for the good of the region. Iran was granted the full membership of the SCO by a unanimous decision on Friday, becoming the ninth member of the bloc. The decision was made at the SCO's 21st annual meeting underway in Tajikistan's capital, Dushanbe. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi is also in attendance in the two-day summit. The Islamic Republic joined the SCO in 2005 as an observer state. The United States has imposed sanctions on several individuals and entities linked to the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, and Iran. The U.S. Treasury Department said it is designating Lebanon and Kuwait-based financial conduits that fund Hezbollah. It also targeted alleged financial facilitators and front companies that supported the resistance group and the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Hong Kong-based companies and individuals residing in China were among those sanctioned. The U.S. deems Hezbollah to be a terrorist group. It has sanctioned several Hezbollah members, including its leader and deputy leader. This is while Hezbollah chief Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has dismissed the sanctions, saying the U.S. will not be able to harm the resistance. Political commentator Romero Funes says Hezbollah and Iran have been at the forefront of fighting real terrorists who have been spreading chaos and extremism in the region.
Hezbollah and the Lebanese resistance is by no means a terrorist group. In fact, Hezbollah and Iran have been at the forefront of defeating the real terrorists in the region in the Middle East, ISIS, Daesh, United States, Israel. These are the real terroristic forces in the Middle East. And this is why in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Yemen, in Iran, the anti-imperialist resistance has been growing, the axis of resistance. And these are the brave men and women who have been on the front lines against the real terrorists who have been spreading chaos and extremism in the region. And this is pure hypocrisy, because Hezbollah, Iran, Daesh, Hezbollah, and the Lebanese resistance, they have a common enemy with the U.S., which is terrorism, which is extremism. And to brand Hezbollah as a terrorist group, to sanction individuals for supporting a heroic anti-imperialist struggle, is just pure hypocrisy. So I think on many fronts, this just represents the overall double standards of U.S. empire.
Paris recalls its ambassadors to the U.S. and Australia following Canberra's new military pact with Washington and London that scrapped a $40 billion French-designed submarine deal. The French foreign minister says the rare decision taken by President Emmanuel Macron was made due to the seriousness of the event. France had already called the abandonment of the deal as a stab in the back. Australia on Thursday said it would ditch the deal for a French company to build a fleet of conventional submarines. Canberra said it will instead build at least 8 nuclear-powered submarines with American and British technology after striking a trilateral military partnership. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns Israel about the consequences of its crimes against Palestinians held in the regime's prisons. Hamas vowed to liberate the Palestinian inmates recaptured after escaping from the Gilboa prison. It said the inmates will be part of any exchange deal in the future. The movement described the Gilboa prison break the latest in a series of failures suffered by Israel's security, military, and political system. On September 6, 6 Palestinian inmates fled the high-security prison through a hole reportedly dug with a spoon. They later were rearrested, or the later rearrest of 4 of the inmates, that is, sparked protests across the occupied territories in solidarity with Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. The regime has toughened restrictions on Palestinian inmates and their families since the jailbreak. And people have held Friday prayers in front of the Red Cross office in the besieged Gaza Strip in support of Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails. Ruba Shapit has more from Gaza.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip took part in Friday prayer in front of the headquarters of the Red Cross. The event, organized by different Palestinian factions, aims to support Palestinian prisoners who are subjected to Israeli abuse.
We are here to stress that we will not disappoint our Palestinian prisoners, and we will keep supporting them. Our prisoners are passing through difficult times inside the jails as the regime is attacking the prisoners, especially Islamic Jihad members.
Meanwhile, Palestinians consider the recent heroic escape operation of 6 prisoners from an Israeli jail as a slap in the face of Israel.
We are doing our best to release Palestinian prisoners, and this is an oath that we should stick with until all Palestinian inmates are free. We are working round the clock to hold meetings and put plans so we can liberate our prisoners and have them run us and with their families. Our resistance made a firm decision that the 6 Palestinian inmates that escaped Gilboa prison are on top of any coming exchange deal.
The Palestinian resistance mentors the behavior of the Israeli regime towards the prisoners inside the jails and those who remain free, demanding the international institutions to put pressure on Israel regarding the prisoners' issue.
The issue of our inmates inside Israeli jails is ongoing, and there are still 2 of the 6 heroic escapees out of the Israeli prison. We are here to express our total support for those inmates and all Palestinian prisoners who are fighting to achieve their demands.
Palestinians here stress they will remain committed to their duty of supporting prisoners and demanding their release. The issue of Palestinian inmates is a priority for Palestinians, who will keep demanding their release until they regain complete freedom. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
The U.S. military admits a drone strike it carried out late last month in Afghanistan killed civilians and not Daesh terrorists.
It is further my assessment that the strike team were convinced at the time of the strike that the area was clear of civilians, and that they had taken prudent steps in regards to weaponizing the strike to minimize the potential for civilian casualties. Finally, it is my assessment that they did believe, as reported, that there was a secondary explosion. Our investigation now concludes that the strike was a tragic mistake.
General McKenzie said the U.S. intelligence had, quote, reasonable certainty that the suspected location was a Daesh position where terrorists were planning an attack on Kabul airport. McKenzie put the death toll from the airstrike at 10 people, including 7 children. The U.S. had said it was retaliating against the deadly August 26th bombing of the airport. The attack, which was claimed by Daesh, killed over 180 people, including 13 American service members. The strike came as Afghan and foreign nationals were rushing to leave Afghanistan. Activist and commentator Sarah Flanders says the U.S. made no mention of reparations for killing civilians in Afghanistan. Take a listen.
It's come through when the whole world already knows, and knows it through photo and images and visits and interviews. However, it says nothing about the literally hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians who've been killed in U.S. wars. No mention of reparations. Instead, how to further starve down the people of Afghanistan through sanctions, through cutting off every ounce of funds, through taking Afghanistan's own money and leaving them penniless without food as winter is coming on. So this is cruelty and terror in an organized way, and they've been forced to concede that this last drone attack was a mistake. But we should be clear that already it's been admitted that 8 out of 10 of U.S. drone attacks, and there have been more than 14,000 U.S. drone attacks, Hellfire missiles fired, 8 out of 10 of them are mistakes.
The United Nations has warned the world to get ready to face bigger crises if the new Afghan government under the Taliban collapses economically. The UNHCR has appealed to the world to stabilize Afghanistan financially to contain the existing humanitarian and economic crises from getting out of control. Press TV's correspondent Javed Rana has more from Islamabad.
One of the major border crossing points between Pakistan and Afghanistan. For decades, on an average, every day, tens of thousands of people have been making back and forth movements on both sides of 2,700-kilometer long porous border. After the return of the Taliban in Afghanistan, many Afghans are using Pakistan as a transit route to leave for Western destinations, given 70% unemployment in the neighboring country. However, weeks before and after the Taliban's takeover, the Western media have reported such routine traveling of Afghan citizens as being fresh influx of refugees into Pakistan,
this visit of
something the visiting UN High Commissioner have not denied to be the case.
The situation is better because there is no fighting. I have often been asked, is there big refugee movements? We have not seen big refugee movements, but of course, if the state collapses, we could see a lot of people trying to seek refuge in other countries. If the state ceases to function, this will provoke a crisis that is much bigger than humanitarian.
The UNHCR has reported nearly 500,000 internally displaced Afghan citizens inside Afghanistan. Their houses were bombarded by the U.S. and the former Afghan Air Force during clashes with the Taliban in the major urban centers like Kandahar, Herat, and Kunduz. Rest of Afghanistan largely fell to the Taliban after the U.S.-trained Afghan army surrendered without any fighting.
We must make sure that displaced people can either go back to their homes, and some people are going back to their homes, or if they are displaced, they are under a shelter. And you know, many are not. Many are out in the open, sleeping rough.
Analysts point out that the real problem in Afghanistan is deteriorating economy, as Afghan financial system has been dependent at least 60% on foreign aid. With the change of guard in Kabul, the Western countries and the UN have resumed funding, which is far less than what the new government requires to stabilize the fragile economy. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
In India, hate crime incidents against Muslims are increasing at an alarming pace, from industrialists to small business owners to even hawkers. None have been spared. Our correspondent Manawa Zaman has more.
This is one of the world's largest democracies, and on the wall of the parliament, which represent democracy, there is a sentence which reads Vasudeva Kutumbakam. It means the world is one family, and this is considered the most important moral value of the Indian society. But this is apparently not the case anymore, considering the growing discord in the society. In recent months, attacks against Muslim hawkers have come under the spotlight in social media. Critics say hate crimes against Muslims increased after the emergence of the Hindu nationalist government of the ruling BJP.
In India, from over close to a decade, the Muslim poor community is being further marginalized. This is being done by boycotting the Muslim hawkers and small Muslim traders.
Experts say in India, the political notion has changed from a strong secular nation to a theocratic Hindu nation, which has given rise to violence against Muslims. Now, Hindu extremists have been busy running this show through social media. Experts say the country, which is apparently known as the world's largest democracy, is under grave danger of losing this title. In a nation of diverse ethnic and religious groups, now even beggars are being humiliated and intimidated just because of their faith and are asked to leave the country since they are Muslims. Based on reports by several rights groups, since the ruling BJP came to power in 2014, it has adopted various laws and taken actions that legitimize discrimination against the religious minorities and stigmatize critics of the government. Experts believe it could lead to instability in the world's most populous nation. The ruling party of the Prime Minister Modi has fervently denied any discrimination against the community, saying India is a democracy and believes in equal rights for all. But critics say Prime Minister Modi's slogan of everyone together, development for all, and everyone's trust is nothing but a political tool to appease the voters as usual. Munawwar Zaman, New Delhi.
That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight. Before and after the assault on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January, the most senior U.S. general took steps to prevent former President Donald Trump from going rogue and launching a nuclear war or an attack on China, according to excerpts from an eagerly awaited new book by the Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Martin Pengeli. The piece is titled, Top General Feared Trump Would Launch Nuclear War, Woodward Book reports. Before and after the assault on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January, the most senior U.S. general took steps to prevent former President Donald Trump from going rogue and launching a nuclear war or an attack on China, according to excerpts from an eagerly awaited new book by the Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward. The Watergate veteran's third Trump book, Peril, is written with Robert Costa, another Washington Post reporter. It is due to be published next Tuesday, 21st of September, a week before publication day. The Washington Post and CNN publish extracts from the book. Following the first two books in the series, Fear and Rage, Peril covers the end of the Donald Trump presidency and the start of Joe Biden's first term in the White House. Veteran Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward and Robert Costa portrayed General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as certain that Donald Trump had gone into serious mental decline in the aftermath of the election, which he insisted, without evidence, was fixed. General Mark Milley reportedly thought the president had become all but manic, screaming at officials and constructing his own alternate reality about endless election conspiracies. According to the authors, General Mark Milley worried that Donald Trump could go rogue and told senior staff, "You never know what a president's trigger point is." According to the Washington Post, General Mark Milley made a pair of secret phone calls to his Chinese counterpart, General Li Zhoucheng, to say Washington would not strike Beijing. One phone call reportedly took place on 30th of October 2020, just 4 days before the presidential election. The other took place on 8th of January 2021, just 2 days after Donald Trump's supporters attacked the Capitol building in Washington, seeking to overturn Donald Trump's defeat. In the first phone call, prompted also by tensions in the South China Sea and over the origins of the coronavirus pandemic, General Mark Milley reportedly told his Chinese counterpart, General Li, "I want to assure you that the American government is stable and everything is going to be okay. We're not going to attack or conduct any kinetic operations against you." General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, also reportedly told the Chinese general he would warn him if an attack was launched. In the second phone call after the Capitol riot, General Mark Milley told his Chinese counterpart, General Li, "We are 100% steady, everything's fine, but democracy can be sloppy sometimes." Donald Trump was impeached for a second time for inciting the riot, but was acquitted in a Senate trial. More than 600 people have been charged over the Capitol attack, around which 5 people have died. This weekend, supporters of those charged will rally in Washington, D.C. Capitol Police, overwhelmed on 6th of January, have been preparing increased security measures. As Donald Trump retains a firm grip on the Republican Party and the party in Congress, a House committee containing only 2 dissident Republicans continues to investigate the 6th of January assault in the Capitol. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was central player and apparent key source in a slew of new books on Trump's presidency that came out this summer. In I alone can fix it, by the Washington Post reporters Carol Leonick and Philip Rucker. General Mark Milley is described before the Capitol attack resisting Donald Trump's demands that the military be used against anti-racism protesters, whilst fearing a Reichstag moment, a coup by supporters of a president preaching the gospel of the Führer. General Mark Milley is also shown assuring the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that Donald Trump would not be able to use nuclear weapons. Susan Glasser, a journalist working for the New Yorker magazine, whose own Donald Trump book will come out next year, reported that General Milley worked to stop Donald Trump launching an attack. Woodward and Costa report that Nancy Pelosi told General Mark Milley, "What I'm saying to you is that if they couldn't even stop him from an assault on the Capitol, who even knows what else he may do? And is there anybody in charge at the White House who was doing anything worthwhile? You know he's crazy. He's been crazy for a long time." According to Woodward and Costa, General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said, "Madam Speaker, I agree with you on everything." Woodward and Costa also say the general was aware of parallels to the case of James Schlesinger, the Secretary of Defense, who in 1974 took steps to safeguard against presidential abuse of the nuclear arsenal during the downfall of former President Richard Nixon. A downfall in large part caused by Woodward in his work with fellow journalist Carl Bernstein investigating the Watergate scandal. Bob Woodward and Robert Costa also report that concerns about Donald Trump spread among other senior national security staff. Gina Haspel, the then director of the CIA, reportedly told General Mark Milley, "We are underway to a right-wing coup."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us ponder a famous saying narrated by the Prophet's seventh infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazem, peace be upon him, regarding his illustrious ancestress, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. "Poverty shall not enter a house inhabited by people having the names Muhammad from among men and Fatima from among women."
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Thank you for joining us here today. Here at The Key and IRIB English Radio, today on The Key, we want to examine a question that some people might ask regarding some of the events that occurred after the Battle of Karbala and Ashura. Some people say that when the captives from the Battle of Karbala were taken to Syria and Damascus, and they were paraded through the streets and taken to the castle and the fortress of Yazid, the sister of Imam Hussein, the Lady Zainab alayha salam, cursed the people of Palestine and Syria. And the current events that we are seeing today, in other words, the destruction of these lands that we see today, is the direct result of this curse. And as a corollary, some people say that because of this, it's not good and it's not fitting, keeping this in mind, for us to support these people in Palestine or these people in Syria. Because this is the direct result of this curse that occurred and the Lady Zainab gave them. It's actually interesting to note that a lot of people make a similar claim with respect to certain Arab countries which we see today are really quite prosperous. They say that this prosperity of these nations is the direct result of the prayer that Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam did. That's been mentioned in the Quran. Hazrat Ibrahim prayed for these nations, and therefore these nations, their prosperity is the direct result of the blessing of the Prophet Abraham, and therefore it's not really fitting and good to actually condemn these people and these nations. Of course, just because a nation is prosperous, even if it's by the prayer of a prophet or a saint or an imam, it doesn't necessarily mean that this nation or this people or even an individual is on the right path, or that he's felicitous in the next world or in the hereafter. It's possible that these blessings that have been given to this person is simply a test, or it could even be an instance of what we call istidraj, where God Almighty gives blessings to a nation so that they increase in their tyranny and rebelliousness, so that God can punish them even more. But we're more concerned here in this program. We're going to address the first question. We can answer this question in a number of different ways. But the main answer that we want to give here is that this matter is something that doesn't have any basis in our historical texts. Meaning historians have examined the texts of the Battle of Karbala and the events that subsequently followed it, and experts in this field and experts who have researched this matter have not come across anything in valid and authentic and reliable historical documents that would somehow support such a thing. It is true that Hazrat Zainab, when she was taken to the courtyard of Yazid, she did curse the oppressors who had killed her brother. However, there's no mention, direct mention, of the people of Syria or Palestine or also these lands. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the curse of Lazy Zainab of Palestine and Syria and its authenticity or the lack thereof in historical sources. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
The Light.
Egyptian archaeologists have completed the renovation of a tomb of an ancient king, providing a rare glimpse into the world's oldest known pyramid. The 4,700-year-old Step Pyramid was built during the reign of King Djoser. The southern tomb is the second for the king and is smaller compared to royal tombs. Some researchers suggest it was built for the preservation of Djoser's internal organs, while others say it was built symbolically. It had been undergoing renovation for 15 years before being reopened to the public.
120 tons of blocks were raised by Egyptian hands, astonishingly and with the determination to achieve one goal. That is the reconstruction of the tomb, just as it was 4,700 years ago.
The complex is historically significant, as it is the earliest known example of the Egyptian custom of pharaohs being buried in pyramid-shaped tombs. According to experts, ancient Egyptians believed that this step design served as a gigantic stairway of the soul of the deceased pharaoh that could ascend to the heavens. Now, we've all grown up playing with a pinball machine at least once in our lifetime. Now, a free runner has designed a giant scaled-up pinball machine, turning it into his personal playground. Latvian free runner Pasha Petkuns came up with the idea of playing on real-life pinball machines during a road trip. The set, made in London, is not for the faint-hearted, as it is slanted at a 45-degree angle. Pasha thought his breakdancing experience might help, but in the end, he had to invent a whole new style of movement. The producer of the film, showing the performance on the machine, described the set as very scary.
It's 17 meters high, it's 16 meters wide, and 20 meters long. It's an angle of 45 degree, and I don't know if you understand how much 45 degree is. It's like, it's a double black diamond slope. It's something you don't go down, you can't, because it's more like falling than anything else.
It does sound scary. Now, the impressive set, designed to look like a retro pinball machine you might find in arcades, took 7 weeks to construct. Global landmarks like the Eiffel Tower and the Statue of Liberty are featured in it. Petkuns works as a Hollywood stunt double. plastic pollution has become one of the most pressing environmental issues, as disposable products overwhelm the world's ability to deal with them. But a young Spanish designer is dedicating his time to the cause of recycling plastic waste. 28-year-old Humberto Les quit his job last year to focus full-time on his environmental efforts. He collects trash from the coast of his home island of Gran Canaria. Humberto usually picks up an average of 5 kilos from the shore at a time. After he is done compiling, he processes the material and turns it into pieces of furniture. Humberto's aim is to make the task of recycling plastic economically justifiable, that is.
I decided to leave my job, stability, to come back here to develop a project to clean the coastline by designing furniture, because I realized that the coast could not be cleaned in an altruistic manner. So I found a way to give economic value to the waste found in the coast.
Humberto is making products ranging from clothes hangers to stools, but he also wants to create larger products with a longer lifespan in the future. According to the UN Environment Programme, only 9% of all plastic waste produced throughout history has ever been reprocessed. Around 80% of it remains accumulated in dumps, landfills, or nature.
A floating concert venue has entertained music lovers in London. Renowned pianist Masayuki Tayama and his partner started the project to play on a canal boat traversing the city's waterways 2 months ago. Since then, they have performed 9 concerts, and their upcoming performances are already sold out in months ahead. The couple came up with the idea after living on a narrow boat with a digital piano.
This is the piano boat, which is the only canal boat of its kind. It was built to our specifications as a floating concert venue. So we have a brand new Steinway grand piano, and here we give musical experiences for people on the canals.
The artists believe the experience is very different from playing in regular concert halls. They say recitals on the boat create a unique interaction with the audience and it feels friendlier. Small fairy pigeon Vader has interrupted a cricket match in Ireland. A playful puppy ran into the field of a semi-final match and caught the ball. The scene caused laughter amongst those present. After a few minutes of chasing the dog, players managed to get the ball back. The funny video has gone viral on the internet.
A caiman and a local tour guide in Bolivia's Amazon region have formed an unlikely friendship with bonds going viral on the internet. Although people are warned to stay away from caimans, Alejandro Gil has struck up a friendship with one special reptile named Jesus. Despite the caiman's carnivorous nature, it shakes his tail and allows Gil to pat it on the head after being fed. At 4 meters long, Gil, however, admits that getting close to Jesus does still make him nervous.
My knees shake when I work with Jesus. I'm always scared and very careful, and also respectful to tourists. Guides in the Pampa de Yacuma and across Bolivia consult with tourists before undertaking an activity. If they agree with it, then we do it. If one person is not in agreement with an activity, then we don't do it.
Gil says they are only able to get in touch with a caiman in a dry season when the river is at low water levels. They lose the reptile in January when the river rises. Caimans inhabit Mexico, Central and Northern South America, from marshes and swamps to mangrove rivers and lakes. Their diet consists of a great deal of fish, but caimans also hunt insects, birds and small mammals and reptiles. new initiative has been launched to turn the spotlight on the misery of Syrian refugee children. Little Amal, a giant puppet depicting a young Syrian refugee child, has arrived in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. This 3.5 meter tall puppet has traveled all the way from Syria to Turkey, Greece, and Italy. It will then go to France, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, and the UK to focus attention on the urgent needs of young refugees. Syrian refugees, especially children, are in a dire situation after being driven from their homes due to the conflict in their country.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Archaeologists have discovered the largest ever bronze mask in an archaeological site in China's southwest Sichuan province.
This is a large bronze mask we unearthed from the central park of the number 3 ritual pit. The widest part, from one tip of ear to the other, is 136 centimeters, and the height is around 75 centimeters. It can be regarded as the largest bronze mask unearthed in Sanjingdui, and even the largest in the Shang and the Shu dynasties.
The mask was found together with other cultural objects such as ivory and bronzeware. These items needed to be removed first before handling the mask, which made the extraction process complicated. Restoration work is underway on the largest bronze mask taken from the site. The relic is believed to be thousands of years old, dating back to the Shu period. The site is an archaeological treasure mine belonging to the Bronze Age of over 4,000 years ago. The area was first discovered in China in the late 1920s. An Australian zoo has welcomed two baby bilbies, an endangered species. Their birth has brought joy and hope to zookeepers and wildlife enthusiasts. The baby bilbies were born in Taronga Zoo in Western Sydney. Zookeepers named the two male joeys, Molly and Cliff, after a national park that once was home to herds of this animal. The birth of the joeys has raised hope among the zookeepers of reintroducing the species to the wild. Bilbies were once found across 70% of Australia's landmass. They are believed to have inhabited Australia for up to 15 million years.
Chameleons changing color is one of the most fascinating traits amongst living creatures. Now, can't humans make a robot with the same capability? In a science lab in Seoul, a team of engineers have created a robot that mimics the color-changing ability of the famous lizard. The researchers have made the skin with a special ink that changes color based on temperature and is controlled by tiny flexible heaters. The head engineer says creating a wearable device that can actively change color and patterns was the main goal of the study.
The pattern of South Korea's military uniform is made for woodland and certain colors. So if you wear this military uniform and go to the desert, you can be easily exposed. Actively changing colors and patterns to match different surroundings is the key of camouflage technology, and we made this possible.
The total thickness of the flexible, multi-layered artificial skin is thinner than a human hair. The scientists envision that their research can be adapted for military uniforms to help soldiers blend into their surroundings. It can also be used for aesthetic purposes such as fashion, exterior of cars and buildings, as well as future display technology.
Visitors and staff of a French zoo have been amazed by the surprise birth of two African lion cubs. The babies, a boy and a girl, were born 2 weeks ago in Amnival Zoo. Their birth was unexpected due to their father's advanced age of 17. The cubs will live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. According to zookeepers, they are currently in good health. The Amnival Zoo has asked people on social media to name the newborns. The German capital, Berlin, turns colorful as the annual mural festival has brought artists together to display their works around the city. Artists have instilled new life into neighborhoods with giant murals that attracted hundreds of visitors. This year's event was resumed under the motto Home Street Home after its 2020 edition was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Organizers say the paintings invite people to discover the city as a gigantic open-air gallery.
The Italian city of Venice has held its annual historical regatta festival, attracting hundreds of spectators. People wearing costumes rowed their colorful boats and gondolas through the city's Grand Canal. The participants reenacted the city's history by carrying people dressed up as the King of Venice and his wife up the canal. Some of the riders also put their strength to the test by racing each other throughout the day. The regatta dates back to the 13th century and has been held every year in September.
An extraordinary concert has entertained hundreds of people in the German city of Dresden. Musicians performed underwater while five steamboats accompanied them with their whistles. The City Symphony Orchestra organized the event in an attempt to boost up people exhausted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Residents welcomed the program, describing it as a glimmer of hope. They believe that the unusual concert was good for heart and soul.
Young generations are becoming more concerned about our planet and seem determined to contribute to make it environmentally friendly. A great example is this Parisian boy who spends a lot of time fishing metals out of rivers and canals in the French capital. Good for him. 11-year-old Raphael uses magnets and grappling irons to fish metal objects out of the Seine River in Paris. Over the past 2 years, he has taken hundreds of bikes, scooters and shopping trolleys out of the water. The boy says the practice was initially a hobby for him, but it eventually turned into a reasonability and a method to raise awareness about climate and environmental issues.
My goal is to raise awareness so that a maximum of people do something. They don't have to do what I do, but at least do something. Even if it's not necessarily cleaning up canals, it could just be picking up a cigarette butt.
Raphael has also fished some very rare items out of different canals, including handguns, pieces of jewelry, and an artillery shell. An exhibition is therefore being held in Paris where Raphael's findings are going to be put on display. The young environmentalist has also been awarded the Medal of Paris, a prize belonging to the residents who accomplish a deed concerning the city.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com www.ipinball.com/en.
In the limelight.
The recent meeting in Moscow between Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his Russian host, Vladimir Putin, was a shock to the terrorists. Whether those operating as mercenaries in the Levant or those directing them from the U.S., the oil-rich Arab states occupied Palestine and certain West European capitals. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Kahan International. This article is published under the heading Assad-Putin Summit Sounds Death Knell for Terrorists. Stay tuned for more. The recent meeting in Moscow between Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his Russian host, Vladimir Putin, was a shock to the terrorists. Whether those operating as mercenaries in the Levant or those directing them from the United States, the oil-rich Arab states occupied Palestine and certain West European capitals. It was a warm meeting between two friendly heads of sovereign independent states, who reviewed their vital cooperation and, of course, planned for future action for reconstruction of Syria and for liberation of the last remaining parts of that country under occupation from uninvited armies of the U.S. and Turkey. Russia recently arranged for the return to complete control of the Damascus government of Dara on the borders of Jordan, where sedition was first sparked in 2011. And devilishly exploited by the West and reactionary Arabs to plunge Syria into a 10-year crisis. Now, with the terrorists and their dependents transported to the occupied parts of Idlib in the northwest for the final push out from Syria, the local population that was displaced all these years is streaming back to their hometown. And with newfound confidence that no mischief mongers would ever be allowed in the future to disturb the peace of their hometowns, Jordan has been served notice that under any pretext, it would not be allowed to manipulate the suspicious elements lingering in its so-called refugee camps for causing cross-border tension, and this means the Americans and the Persian Gulf Arabs should also be careful about any misstep. Putin, in his long meeting with Assad that was later joined by Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad and Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu, felicitated his guest on winning the recent presidential elections, said, "Foreign armed forces that remain in certain regions of your country without the approval of the United Nations and without your permission have no right to stay." It means the presence of the American troops on Syrian soil is illegal and undesirable, and should immediately end for the sake of peace and stability.